This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
John.
Yeah?
Not that you've got a mother-in-law.
No.
As such.
You have.
I have.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm quite happy with mother-in-law.
The old mother-in-law jokes with Les Dawson.
Yeah, they were great.
My mother-in-law. She's so... the mice are so frightened they throw themselves on the traps when she comes round. Throw themselves on the traps. It's
good.
A great gag, isn't it?
It's a very good gag.
The mice throw themselves on the traps.
Okay. There's a man who has bought a tarantula.
Yeah.
Because he can't stand his arachnophobic mother-in-law and wants her to stop coming round. Right? Okay. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
Just the fact that it... You know, so what, when you get a tarantula, you can't exactly like put it out in the living room, can you?
How do you buy a tarantula?
We can buy a tarantula.
Yeah,
can't you? Yeah.
Well, you have to. Obviously, you have to keep it in a.
What?
Well, it's a tarantula.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can't just start wandering around the living room.
Can they just? I mean, it's like selling guns, isn't it? I'm sure you know. You've got to have a little bit of a check on the background, haven't you? Right. I'll just go in and buy a tarantula, surely.
You can? You can, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you can, yeah. Amazon. So you send it through the post. It'll be fine. We're joined by Britton Stelly now, founder of Creature Courage and the Spider Courage Experience. Yeah. Britton, just tell us about this. Have you ever heard a story like this before where somebody's bought a tarantula to frighten somebody off?
Well, to frighten someone off, some people, yes, but more people to actually help people. In fact, we encourage it in our workshop.
Yes.
And just to go back to your comments about people buying tarantulas, I'm actually going to the British Tarantula Society convention this weekend, where there'll be thousands and thousands and thousands of people going to a warehouse full of tarantulas.
Oh my goodness.
And arachnids. So, yes, really? It's a hobby. It's a hobby in itself, and tarantulas are really not that dangerous, so it's okay to buy tarantulas.
I was going to say this. Johnny Sperling here knows that I'm terrified of spiders. And I don't know why. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm not.
I just, as a kid, I've always been terrified of spiders. Even if there's one in the house now, I have to get my wife to go and get it. It's that ridiculous.
Yeah, you were.
I don't know why. it's a bit strange. When you look at a tarantula, they look a little bit more...
friendly.
Serene, don't they?
They'll bite you, don't they?
No. Well, it depends on the species, but there's plenty of species of tarantula that are very placid, and, you know, you're safer holding them than a hamster. The tarantulas I work with when I'm doing my phobia work are very friendly, and I've, you know, hundreds of children have held them. I would much rather put them in the hand of a child than a hamster, because they're slow-moving and trustworthy.
Of course,
done properly, but... The thing of it is, phobias, no one's born with a spider phobia. It might seem like it, as the only fears we're actually born with are the fear of falling and loud noises. Yeah. It's a learned behavior, but usually when we're a child so young that we can't actually remember, you know, maybe something happened that was perceived as traumatic, like walking to a spider web, or you have an evil little brother. We hear of evil little brothers all the time who fill their, you know, sister's beds full of spiders, that sort of thing. Yeah. Or you learn it from a parent. If a parent's phobic, it's very easy to pass down the phobia. That's why we really encourage people who have children to go on to our workshops, because it's not really a nice fear to pass down to a child, because spiders are everywhere. You can't avoid them. So it's better to not be afraid of such an animal.
Mm. Yeah, it's quite a weird one.
So you're the founder of the Creature Courage and the Spider Courage Experience. So what exactly do you do?
Well, we do a 4-hour to 5-hour workshop, and we take a small group of arachnophobes, and we take them through several proven phobia fighting techniques, such as NLP, hypnotherapy, art therapy, education, etc. And after we get them in a very strong and resourceful state, we do the immersive therapy, where they actually capture, release a house spider, and handle tarantula, and even handle house spiders by the end of it. Not that they'd have to do that in an everyday sense, but nothing kills a phobia quite like that, because psychologically, if you've actually held one and you have a memory of this, you have photo and video evidence, you know you can't be the same level of afraid as before.
I was going to say that. I've often seen hypnotherapists do this to people, and then suddenly they look round and they're holding a tarantula. My only problem is I would love to be like that, but I don't want to confront my phobia. So I think to myself, I'm better off being scared of spiders than actually going to your workshop.
I would be a very rich woman if every arachnophobe was ready to confront their fear.
Yeah.
This therapy, if you're ready to do it, we will achieve this goal. If you're committed, we're committed. We've had 100% success rate.
Wow.
An amazing aftercare program. Like, we are committed to our clients, and I've never failed anyone. If someone's dedicated, most people are cured in one session. That's
really?
It.
Oh,
really?
I run free top-up sessions in case people want a little encouragement and a little bit of reinforcement. But most people are 100% cured in just one session. But, you know, simple phobias like arachnophobia are actually quite easy to cure in one session.
See,
and there's no point living your life that way, you know, if it can be cured very easily. It's just, okay, go through one day of going through it, and then you don't have to live the rest of your life that way.
Well,
and the great thing is, if you can cure that fear, what else can you do? It's like a huge motivational experience.
Yeah.
The thing is, Britain, what I would like to say is that I think if you've got a fear of ordinary spiders, you know, I haven't got a fear of those. I've got a fear of things that hurt me. I've got a fear of wasps because wasps hurt me. I've got a fear of if I'm around snakes and they can bite me.
Or Alsatians.
Or dogs that can bite me. Yeah. That's what I have fears of. I don't actually have any fear. You know, people have got a fear of like walking up the stairs or something like that. Do you know what I mean? But I've got fears of actually things that are going to hurt me.
Yeah.
I don't think they're ever going to go.
Do tarantulas, you said about the species, are there tarantulas that can kill you?
Yeah.
No, they can't kill you. Tarantula venom compared to other spider venom is very, very mild. I mean, the old world species have slightly more potent venom. You know, you'd have a bad couple of days, but they're not going to kill you. They're not going to kill you.
That's all right then, Britain.
Yeah.
That's all right. A couple of days in the coma, you're all right. Wake up.
No, spiders are so passive. Like that's one of the things we do with education is like the exaggerated claims of spider bites. And, you know, you're 300 times more likely to be bitten and killed than a spider. They don't even make the top 20 most deadliest animals in the world.
Britain, can I ask you something about it? If I would never go in and do the jungle. I'd never do the jungle. I said I'd go and do Big Brother or something like that. But if I got asked to do the jungle, I couldn't do it. And it's purely, it's not, I don't think it's the snakes. I don't think it's the rats.
What about jumping out of the plane?
I could jump out of the plane easily.
Oh, no.
But it's just the spiders. And I'm wondering whether it's the movement. It's how quick spiders, especially those ones that are in the jungle that I see, that absolutely terrifies me. Whereas I look at tarantulas, they move quite slowly. So I'm wondering
tarantulas are kind of like the ambassador of the spider world because they're like fluffy and they're big and they look, you can kind of relate them to a small furry animal.
Yes.
But yes, the quickness of other spider species.
Beautiful colours, by the way, Britain.
Yeah.
Beautiful colouring, aren't they?
What is that?
It's like Pokemon, got to catch them all.
What is that spider that's in the jungle that moves so quick?
Well, there's loads of spiders. There's over, you know, 40,000 described spider species.
I'm talking about it. I'm a celebrity in the show. What's that one that jumps
the
around?
The famous one. Britain, the famous spider.
Yeah, the famous spider.
I don't know.
There's millions of them, Sam. Millions of them.
But yes, it's often the unpredictability because we're afraid of things that we can't control and we can't predict.
Yeah.
But, you know, I teach people in our workshop to meditate on the fact that it's a natural movement. So instead of associating it with this negative feeling that it's more of a natural movement, it's just an animal trying to survive. They're not aggressive. They're not trying to purposely attack us. If they can avoid us, that's what they would prefer to do.
Of course.
We can easily kill them and they're not going to survive.
That's very, very, very true, that Britain. And then let me tell you something. When I was a kid, and there was daddy long legs or spiders and people used to, you know, put their foot on them, I would really be upset. It used to upset me and it still does.
Oh, hang on a minute.
If I see a spider, okay, come on, mate, and I'll put him on my hand and put him outside. I think that's always the best thing to do, don't you?
I don't.
No, I know you don't.
Well, we would encourage a capture-release kit with a little, you know, cup and a cardboard.
Yes.
But, yeah, that's the best thing, because spiders are doing an incredible amount of good for the human race.
Tell us a little bit about that, Britain.
I can tell you. Spiders eat, okay, just get this. They eat 400 to 800 million tons of insects, which is equivalent to the entire weight of the human population, if not double. And that's how many insects they eat every year.
And that's more than birds and bats combined. What good does that do? It just gets rid of the insects.
Okay, the number one animal that kills the most human beings every year is mosquitoes.
Yes.
Also, flies. Flies carry so much bacteria that
they
causes a huge amount of health conditions that people don't even realize.
Yes.
Also, all these insects carry disease, eat our food, and also spiders are just as important to our survival as bees, because they found that they can introduce spiders into crop situations with no negative effects. And so it's a pesticide-free solution and a natural way that we can survive and grow crops and work with nature instead of against it.
Yes.
So spiders, and they're a huge part of the food chain. You take spiders out, the whole thing would collapse. Spiders are incredibly important to our survival and every other animal's survival. You really wouldn't want a world without spiders, and they're actually doing so much more good for us than any kind of bad, because they're killing lots of bugs that are actually harmful for us.
Wow.
Can they get rid of mother-in-laws? That's the burning
question.
Well,
obviously it can. Obviously it can. That's fascinating, Britain.
It's wonderful to have you on. And I'm getting the eebie-jeebies just talking about spiders.
Can I just please...
Come to our course. Our next one's 22nd of June. Come along.
Go on the course, Sam.
Luckily, Britain, we've got a gig on the 22nd of June, and it's probably the longest gig that we're doing on the 22nd of June.
May I please, Britain, just ask you one question about your name. An interesting name to be called Britain, because it's normally a last name, isn't it? How did that come up? Where did you get the name?
Well, I was originally American. That might explain a little bit.
Yes. You're still American.
There's really not too much to the story besides she was almost going to name me Brittany, which is horrible. Oh. And then someone said, oh, why don't you name her Britain instead? That's more interesting.
I think it's a lovely name.
And then ironically, I ended up living here and I love it. I've been here almost 16 years and it's definitely my home. I'm a British citizen now, I love it.
The funny thing is, Britain, is that you were named after a country, and my friend here, his daughter is named after a country because her name's Persia.
That's right.
So you're Britain and she's Persia. It's a nice story.
It's a nice link.
It's a nice link.
Britain, thanks ever so much for your time. Founder of Creature Courage and the Spider Courage Experience.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
Man City possible ban, Champions League ban.
Yeah.
And the story is, despite successful Premier League title defence, there's trouble afoot, really, at Manchester. Mm. UEFA are expected to hand Man City a Champions League ban within the next week for breaching financial fair play. The Arab owners are accused of paying £60 million directly into the club, but declaring the money as sponsorship, which you cannot do. We're now joined by David Walker, Man City blogger of Red But Never Red, on this ban. Is this likely to happen, David?
It's a question I can't answer, guys, at the moment. Obviously, only UEFA and Manchester City know the finer points of what's going on. What I would say is that almost from the get-go, UEFA, which has been shown to be corrupt to the core in many instances, as is their senior counterpart FIFA, they seem to have had it in for City for a long, long time, ever since financial fair play was introduced. They have been shown to have moved the goalposts in the past. We were tried and found guilty of our crimes in inverted commas. We paid a £49 million fine for that in the past. That was then reduced because we complied. And it seems to me like they keep trying to go over old ground to find another way of getting us. Mm. As far as I know from, what we've all seen in the media, a lot of the so-called evidence seems to have been gleaned from stolen documentation and emails, which, if that was the body of, quotes, evidence, then I think Manchester City have had enough of all these little kangaroo courts of UEFA and FIFA. Yeah. They will challenge it to the nth degree. And if it goes up the judicial processes to the Court of Sport for arbitration or even higher, if it is evidence, it should surely be ruled inadmissible because you cannot use documentation which is stolen.
Mm. Is there a paper trail? Like what I'm saying is, could they prove what they've done with the 60 million and show it that there was...
Again, I'm not you know, an accredited international finance expert, but if there is a paper trail, it appears to be focused on companies and enterprises based in the UAE, you know, which our Abu Dhabi is an integral part. And I can't see how somebody like UEFA or FIFA can force privately owned companies in foreign land to open their books to scrutiny. And as I say, let's face it, we all know UEFA and FIFA are corrupt. They've been shown to be so. There's nothing to say they've cleansed themselves of that, and I certainly don't believe they have.
Yeah.
And again, I may have a Law A level, but that doesn't qualify me for international finance and judicial processes. But I cannot see how they can present a body of evidence which is legally applicable.
They may have been better off just giving UEFA 60 million.
is the whole thing about financial fair play. As I say, when Infantino was the secretary, Platini's sidekick at UEFA, we went through all this rigmarole and an agreement was thrashed out in the similar way it was with PSG. And they seem to want to keep going back retrospectively to try and nitpick and find things to try and stop City. And although I'm speaking through sky blue tinted spectacles, financial fair play in itself is a complete misnomer. It was probably based on good intentions, but then it was hijacked by the likes of the old cartel of European football, the Giants, the Real Madrid, Barcelona, United, Bayern Munich. And it then descended and degenerated into something just which was basically self-preservation, stop new competitors, new money coming in to thwart the likes of City and PSG dining at the top table.
Yeah, okay. All right, fair enough. I'll get it. It's a funny one because they've got so much money that I think probably the spotlight is on them, isn't it?
Well, so much is said about City's money. As a City fan of many, 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 many years ago, you know, when we were in the depths of the third tier of English football, we know that we got lucky when Sheikh Mansour came knocking and he elected to invest in City. The hypocrisy since then is breathtaking. Every other club would have done exactly the same as we've done. And yet, we're always deemed to be, look at the money, look at the money. Just a small... You've got lies, damned lies and statistics in this world. But in the last season, the season just ended, where we thankfully retained the title, Manchester City had a net transfer spend of negatively 8 million. We actually didn't spend money. We brought in £8 million on all our transfer deals. Yeah. Liverpool spent 144 million. But because, in my humble estimation, Liverpool are the media darlings and everybody wanted Liverpool to win the title, not the population, a lot of the media, and not you guys from being on, you know, Love Sport in the past. But, you know, it's always skewed against Manchester City. But you would say, I would say that, but that's what I'm saying.
Do you think that this is all put a little cloud over, you know, your Premier League champions, but has this put a little cloud over it?
Well, listen, guys, I can't give you every spit and cough of what's happened, but every time City scale the heights, within about 24, 36, 48 hours, there's a negative story comes out in the press. It's either a transfer ban or a Champions League ban, etc., etc.
But do they bring that on themselves, though? Do they bring that on themselves?
You know. Who, City?
Yeah.
In what way? I mean, we win things. Why do we bring negativity?
With the allegations.
With the
money.
Well, that's the point. They're allegations. It's not. Nothing's proven. Everybody knows we've got a rich owner, but we now comply with financial fair play, and to my mind have done for years, even though that in itself is a fatuous bunch of rulings, which in any other industry other than seemingly football in Europe, where is another industry or business where an owner of an entity is prevented from putting their own money into the betterment of their own company? It's only in football.
Yeah, great.
If you own a sort of electronics factory and the owner wants to put an investment in above and beyond the profits made in a calendar year, they're not going to be precluded from doing so. You're investing in a market and you're giving security of employment and, you know, making your way in your sector.
Sure.
Only in football. And also, sorry, while I'm on me high horse.
Go on, get on there.
I'm on there. I'm right. They don't take into account debt. Man City don't have a debt. Mm. Man United have a debts of hundreds of millions. Real Madrid are regularly bailed out by, you know, the sort of regular the authorities in Spain. We're talking government, provincial government, central government. Nobody scrutinises debt. We're not in debt.
No,
so how can those other businesses be above, you know, above and beyond redemption?
I doubt you'll ever be in debt with that lot behind you. I just talk to me about the FA Cup Saturday. Is this that important anymore to the likes of Man City?
Of course it is.
Really? I've heard these stories, David. Just correct me if I'm wrong. That sort of 3,000 tickets were given back, or there's 3,000 tickets. In the old days, you could never get a ticket for the FA Cup final. I just wonder whether it is as important to Man City as it would be for other clubs.
Right. Well, what I know from our end is that Manchester City's ticket allocation sold out.
Okay.
The FA Cup, Pep Guardiola is a serial winner. It's his DNA. He's unrelenting. He's never won the FA Cup. He wants to win the FA Cup.
Hang on a second, though. You didn't beat Spurs, though, did you? We beat you.
Well, I think VAR beat us, my friend. VAR beat us in 2018 against Liverpool when we didn't have it, and when we had it in 2019, Spurs beat us. So we're not big fans of VAR.
To go back
to the original point.
Go on.
We've got a chance to make history. Nobody has ever won a domestic treble.
Agreed.
Pep is a serial winner. Manchester City won that trophy. It's the oldest cup competition in the world, and we desperately want it. We're not taking Watford lightly. You know, they will be there to win the game. Of course they will be. And the thing with Pep, his mentality is unrelenting. He will not let our players think, oh, yeah, I'll just switch off.
Yeah.
There's a cup competition of great prestige. I don't care what other clubs have done to demean it. In fairness to Man City and Pep Guardiola, he puts out strong teams in every competition.
I was going to say that. Do you think he'll play the same? Do you think he'll play the same team as what he played on the last day of the Prem?
I don't know. I mean, Pep Guardiola is a tactical football genius. He will do what he needs to do to try and combat the threats of the like, you know, Troy Deeney and Gray up front. So Company may be up there for the physicality of Troy Deeney. Attacking wise, De Bruyne, he came on as a sub. It was almost a token gesture on Sunday, but that was to sort of get a bit of ring rust off him. If De Bruyne is fit to start, he makes a huge difference, even in the talented midfield that we've got. De Bruyne, you know, he sees that pass that some players don't. Mm. I would imagine Aguero starts up front.
Sane
is a bit of an enigma. We love him as fans. He's brilliant at times. At other times, I don't have the inside track, but maybe his attitude is a bit questionable.
Yeah.
But if anybody can get him on the right track, one would hope it would be Pep. In fair...
Oh, I think... Robin,
we lost you there.
We lost you there for a minute.
Okay. Where am I up to? I said, you were talking about Sane. I said he's an enigma. He's a brilliant player. He can turn a game. We love him as fans. We want him to be settled. Only Pep knows what goes on in training and what might go on in Leroy's head in terms of attitude, but we hope it can be smoothed out. And I was just saying that we were all surprised to see Mahrez on the team sheet at Brighton, but the manager knew best. Mahrez scored an absolute scorcher of a goal, the third goal,
which
stopped all the edge and all the nerves, you know, from tingling further into that game on Sunday. So we trust in Pep implicitly, and he will put out the strongest possible team to achieve the objective of lifting the FA Cup.
Well, no doubt we will be speaking to you next week at some point to see the aftermath of what happened. Thanks for joining us. David Walker, Man City blogger of Red But Never Red. It's going to be an interesting one. It's funny what you just said about Sane, because I think he's an amazing player, and I do wonder why he's not in the team all the time. And it may be that behind the scenes he maybe doesn't train as hard as the others, and Pep maybe sort of kicking him up the trumpet to make him work a bit harder.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Mike Dean, referee. He's that was Pearl and Dean, wasn't it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Pearl and Dean. Mike Dean, the referee, who you may have spotted jumping up and down in the crowd at the Tranmere game. You know, everybody else is cheering, standing in the stand. Mike Dean decides to get up on the barrier and balance on the barrier and throw his fists in the air so that everybody sees him.
Of course, it's Mike Dean. Oh, there's Mike. Look, the most famous Tranmere Rovers fan.
And you referenced that you've got... we know somebody who's...
Very much so, does the same thing.
Is a reasonably famous.
Reasonably and, famous, and he's the most famous. They're a much lower league team. Yeah. I won't mention the team or the fella.
Most famous fan of that team.
Of that team.
There's I mean, if you look at West Ham fans, Ray Winston, obviously.
Oh, West Ham have got a lot of famous fans.
Russell Brand. Just trying to think. Stevie Harris from Iron Maiden. Mm. You know, there's certain famous people that are attributed to that,
yes,
that club. Obviously, we're going to be talking about Elton John on Friday.
Yeah.
Coming up to the FA Cup. Well, yeah. Maybe it's the World Cup. Watford in the World Cup. We will be referencing Elton on Friday because he's not going to be going to the FA Cup.
No, he's going to be doing a gig.
They're doing a gig. Five things you didn't know about Mike Dean. Mike Dean began refereeing in 1985. He progressed to officiate in the Northern Premier League as a referee, becoming a Football League assistant referee in 1995 and being promoted to a full referee in 1997.
He was originally appointed to referee in the 2006 FA Cup final at the Millennium Stadium on the 30th of May 2006. Football Association later replaced him with Alan Wiley after concerns were raised about Dean's ability to be impartial towards Liverpool.
Yeah, it's a strange one, that one.
Yeah.
Fact number three. In September 2015, Arsenal supporters launched a petition to prevent Dean from refereeing their team following a Premier League fixture against Chelsea. Gathering almost 100,000 signatures within a week. The Football Association later rescinded a red card Dean issued to Arsenal defender Gabriel during the incident and handed Chelsea striker Diego Costa a retrospective 3-match suspension for violent conduct.
Wow. And here's number four for you. On the 2nd of April 2019, during a game between Man United and Wolverhampton Wanderers, Dean gave his 100th red card of his career to Ashley Young.
Rightly so.
He pulled his shirt off to reveal a big 100 painted on his chest. And then fireworks went off from all corners of the stadium. Last bit may not be true, by the way.
Can you imagine that? And Mike Dean gives his 100th.
Yeah, fireworks going off.
I love it.
Right.
Pull his shirt off, record himself.
Give us number five.
Number five, and this is probably the most important one.
Go on.
He's a Tranmere fan.
Is that it?
That's it.
That's number five.
I'll be honest with you. Go he's on. Probably Tranmere's most famous fan at the moment.
Their only fan, I should think.
we give that one to him.
Where are Tranmere rovers,
well, don't start me on Tranmere.
Where are they?
No,
I don't mean we're in
they're
the country.
They're up there.
I don't
there.
Mean in the country, I mean in their league.
I don't know, what are you asking me? That's why I said don't ask me.
Let's ask Dave, does he know?
But obviously Mike Dean, that's why he was jumping up and down about it. So,
hang on a sec.
He is an extrovert of a referee.
Right.
And he sort of, you know, he wants the attention on him.
League Two, they're in.
League Two, yeah.
Yeah, they're in League Two. So that's not too bad, is it?
Not too bad. Okay, so Mike Dean, very flash. We was looking at other flash people in sport. We come up with Conor McGregor. And we did just reference, who's the flashiest out of Cristiano Ronaldo and David Beckham?
I would say Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
What would you say?
Well, I would say that because he's annoyingly flash. I don't ever think Beck's
he's a fast flash
fella with a fast flash motor. I don't think Bex was flash in the way that he prances about like Ronaldo. I know he had the tattoos and okay, let's go through some of Bex's. He had the Mohican.
We did.
He had the sarong.
Yeah, the sarong.
Do you remember the sarong?
Yes, I do. Wow, that's a long. Did you like that?
Loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. But hang on a minute.
Go on.
David Beckham wearing a sarong. Mm. Yeah, it's not too bad. Johnny Sterling. Walking out the sarong.
Yeah.
It looks wrong.
It's like a bedspread.
Yeah, I mean, it's not right. I don't think I would have got away with it. There are certain things that Beckham can get away with, I can't. I mean, you know, it's the tattoos.
Why don't we do that on here? Well, why don't we get some pictures of you in all the things that David Beckham has ever done? So we get you in a sarong.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you think so?
Could you have a Mohican?
Yeah.
Give it a go.
Yeah, well, I've got the hair for it. But you have to have good hair, didn't you, to have Mohican?
Yeah, well, you have to shave the sides off, obviously. You have to come in the
But
mornings.
You have to have a right, proper, yeah. You know. Yeah. I can remember my, Nicky Sayers, his name was.
Go on.
Nicky Sayers was the only punk that I knew. Mm. Do you remember, you know, like, in the
yeah,
early...
But Bex wasn't the punk one. He went for, like, the Mr. T Mohican, didn't he?
Yeah, it was still a Mohican, and punks were synonymous
never start
for,
him, yeah.
forever. And he was the only punk I knew, Nicky Sayers. What if he's still a punk? No, it just makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Well, it's strange. Mods tend to stay mods. Our producer, Dave,
Dave's
still
a mod. But hang on a minute. Mods are smart. Punk is slightly different. It's like you walk in, yeah. You know he's a punk. He's got a safety pin through his nose. Yeah. He's got a Mohican makeup on.
I had a mate who was a few years older. They had a punk band.
Yeah.
And he wore a straight jacket, right?
Right.
And this is the bad part about it was, he wore a straight jacket and he was the drummer in the band.
Was he really?
It's unbelievable.
That is unbelievable, yeah.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You are back with Bell and Sperling. We've been talking about the Jeremy Kyle situation and we've been saying about some of these production companies behind the scenes, what they try to set you up. The dangly carrot, get you down to London, put you in a hotel. I referenced that right at the very start of TOWIE. I signed a contract to do TOWIE. I was one of the first people to do it. And then the production company wanted me to talk about other members that were in it. And then I heard they wanted to find out stories about me.
Yes.
So I pulled out of it, didn't do the show.
Yeah.
And I know what some of these production people do.
They manipulate you, don't they?
They manipulate you. Just sensationalise the story.
Of course they do, yeah.
And I know that this has obviously happened in the Jeremy Kyle show and quite a few other reality shows we've
but
said.
It's a lot more serious, I think.
This is
because there's serious issues.
We are joined now by Pam Spur. I love her.
Do you like a title?
Wham Bam, it's Pam.
That's a podcast.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's on Love Sport.
It's on Love Sport on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
Pam, what do you just tell us what your thoughts are on this Jeremy Kyle situation?
Hey guys, I love the fact you love the podcast and show, but it's Wham Bam, it's Dr. Pam.
It's Wham Bam, it's Dr. Pam. Right. Yeah. That's it.
What do I think about this? You know, I've over the years watched 5 minutes here and there of the Jeremy Kyle show, switching off because of the fact it's so combative, divisive. People are whipped up into emotional storms. And the problem is, A, we don't know what's happened, so I'm commenting generally. But in any of these shows where people appear on any sort of reality show, and basically this is a type of reality show, you never know the pressures they're going to feel afterwards. And even with the best psychological screening and evaluation before they're allowed on a show, we don't know how people are going to react. I've been asked over the years to do some of the behind-the-scenes evaluations on various reality shows. And after looking at each pitch they've given to me, looking at the budgets, I decided I did not want to take on the responsibility because the shows that asked me, and may I just say it wasn't Jeremy Kyle, I felt we're not putting enough budget into full psychological evaluations. Mm. So I've only ever done it on screen, like talking about Big Brother's housemates.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I have done is spoken to dozens of Big Brother and other reality show housemates after they've been on the shows, and every single one of them has said to me that after the initial high when you leave a program, they've all had a crash.
Yep.
They're not in the intensity of the environment they've been in, like on Big Brother, and they've gotten used to that intensity. And they emotionally, they have a crash. You don't know how someone's going to respond to that crash. With the best will in the world, the best psychological screening, you just don't know. Because lives are complicated. And people come out to all sorts of complications. And even on something like the Jeremy Kyle show, when you've been whipped up into a fever and you then leave the show, you cannot predict how those individual people will respond to what other people say about them, what they've seen on the show, what the show's discovered. So you're opening up just this Pandora's box.
I've said this for a while, Pam. In fact, I've said it for years, that a lot of these kids get plucked out of obscurity, thrown into, have a little bit of fame for 10 minutes, and then
talking about Love Island now.
I'm talking about all of them. I'm talking about all of these shows that they're plucked out and they're built up by the production team. And then eventually, once that show is over and they're, you know, you get your year of doing your PAs and you earn a few quid. And then after
that... A year if you're lucky.
Yeah, that's true, without a doubt.
But we know, you know, from, you know, having a few hit records over the years that sort of, you know, you get your PAs, you get, it's all the same people behind the scenes that set you up and get your stuff. But they've got to go back to a normality after that. They've got to go back and get a normal job and their little bit of fame... is now at the end of it, because there's a new crop of people that are coming through that year, and you're completely forgotten.
Yesterday's news.
Yeah,
but the thing is,
the new kids in town. Well, suddenly your little crown that you've had for whether it's a few weeks of PAs or a year or two of PAs, depending on how lucky you are when you come out of these things.
Yeah.
You know, your crown is stolen, and if you have an addictive nature, then you get very addicted to that the limelight you've had. And if you're a really grounded person, you will probably cope okay. But no one can predict these things.
No.
You just don't know how, when you come out of a show, your family, your friends, then there's, you know, are going to respond to the things you did. I've had plenty of Big Brother housemates tell me they did things on the show that were out of character because they felt pressured being around the other big personalities to become even bigger themselves.
Definitely.
If you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And some really regretted that they'd, you know, felt that kind of pressure. Others were quite happy and said, you know what, it brought out a louder side of me. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But you just don't know.
Just going back to the Jeremy Kyle thing. Okay, so what has happened is, of course, is that somebody has been on the show, had a lie detector test, Stephen Diamond, I think it is, or was it Brian Diamond?
Yeah,
anyway, but they've had a lie detector. The audience apparently have gone against her, and they're kind of blaming this on him having committed suicide. Now, the thing is that also you've got Love Island was on last year, and the guy from Love Island...
Mike
from Love Island, as you know, he also committed suicide. Mm. Now, the thing is, you could say that was because of the amount of fame that he
crash
got,
of fame, yeah.
The crash of the fame. Not the same thing with this guy, but do you think that blaming the Jeremy Kyle show for his death, should that be?
Well, it's early days to blame anyone.
Yeah.
Suicide is complicated. I don't even know if just because some of the papers reported it may be a suicide. Yeah. I personally can't talk about that this man committed suicide, whether or not it was due to the Jeremy Kyle show or not, because we don't know the facts of the case. But speaking generally, you don't know how deep someone's issues run from a psychological screening and how, if they are, say, on a reality show, caught out for like lying and cheating, as supposedly Mike was, you know, remember he was called Muggy Mike or whatever.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Or someone who takes a lie detector test and it says that they're lying, how they are going to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know. Some people go, well, hey, I was telling the truth and the test is faulty, and other people will be profoundly, you know, damaged by that experience.
But Pam, do you think that some of these production companies, the teams that are behind the scenes... they've got to get one better than the other show. They're going for sensationalised stories, and they will put words in their mouth. I know people that have been on X Factor and The Voice and stuff like that, and they're looking for the story, asking them, have you got a family member that's on their last legs, or have you got something wrong with a kid? You know, they're always looking for a story, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're always looking for a big effect. I was asked to do a reality show about 6-7 years ago that was about fooling members of the public. So I was going to go along as like a psychologist and be part of fooling someone. And I said no.
Yeah.
And I know the psychologist who ended up doing it.
Really?
I just thought it's not worth my integrity to get a fee to go and fool someone who may take it badly.
Exactly.
I'm not going to do that. But I cannot speak for the people on these programs behind the scenes. Of course, yes, they want to keep up the combativeness on something like the Kyle show.
Mm.
They do want that because that's kind of what people are looking for. It's, you know, the gladiators in the Kyle show who are just beating each other to the death, you know, emotionally.
Yeah, it is like that, yeah.
So, So yeah, there may well be production staff on the production team. I don't know. I don't know the production team. That's only just a guess that potentially they may feel we've got to get, you know, a juicy story for next, you know, the next show. I mean, who knows?
Do you think, Pam, that shows like Jeremy Corbyn, I think they're, is that the only one that of that type now, I think, is the Jeremy Corbyn show?
Yeah, Jerry Springer stopped a few years back.
Springer stopped. But in America, I mean, I sometimes see their schedule, and they are absolutely bombarded with...
Yeah, they have a lot.
A lot of those shows. We only now, I think, have... Jeremy Kyle, that fashion.
Yeah, I can't think of any other that has.
No, there
that
isn't
kind
now.
Of...
We used to have a few. We had to, was Trisha. There was Vanessa. What's her name? Used to do it, Vanessa Phelps. She used to have a show, but all the.
But it wasn't. It wasn't.
No, not as ruthless
as Jeremy Kyle.
No, it wasn't. But I think that Pam. I think they're gonna. I think they've pulled Jeremy Kyle and they've pulled all the other shows that you could get on Catch Up.
Yeah, I mean, it says something when they've deleted the catch-up shows on the ITV Hub, where I guess they just want to wipe the slate clean while they are looking into what happens and whether they had more obligation to this person. Again, we don't know. They could have been reaching out to this person every day, and it could be other things in this person's life that have led to his death. Yeah. We don't even know, as I said, if it's suicide or not.
Pam,
you know,
on the last point.
It's all guesswork.
last thing I'd like to ask you is, do you think that they should pull him that show and not have those sort of shows at all now?
I personally never liked the show, and as I said, could only tolerate maybe 5 minutes sitting somewhere that had ITV on and the Jeremy Kyle show would be on. So I personally think that they lead people to feel that that is a good way to behave, or it's okay to behave that way when you get the shrieking families and stuff. Yeah. So in that sense, I personally don't think they're emotionally healthy for viewers, let alone the participants. But that's just my personal point of view.
Yeah, okay. Brilliant. Pam, thanks ever so much for joining us. Always enjoy talking to you. Don't forget Pam's Wham Bam. It's Dr. Pam. He's on Love Sports Saturday and Sunday as well.
And Sundays as well. Yes, repeat.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
We're talking about Chris Hughton sacking Brighton. Very harsh. We don't really understand why he's been sacked.
Do you think it goes a bit deeper, Sam?
I don't know. Like I said to you, it may be the style of football that he's got the team to play and they're not happy with that. That could be it.
Maybe something we don't know, you know. Something behind closed doors. I should think so, would you?
There's been some tweets. Ex-Man United and ex-West Ham footballer Ravel Morrison tweeted, Brighton sacked Chris Hughton for keeping them in the Premier League and getting them to an FA Cup semi-final.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's mad, isn't it?
And also taking them into the Premier League. But for the reason... What reason did he get sacked?
That's what we just said. What reason? What is the real reason?
What you got?
Ian Dark says, Brighton sacking Chris Hughton just doesn't feel right. Would they even be in the Premier League without him? He's got a point, hasn't he?
Yeah. North Stand Chat tweeted, not a brilliant start for Dan Ashworth then. Brighton's new technical director, Dan Ashworth, says his aim is to keep manager Chris Hughton in a job for as long as possible. That didn't go well, did it?
No. Darren Lewis says, just appalling Chris Hughton gets so little respect. Took Newcastle up and they sacked him. Took Brighton up, kept them up, they sacked him. People say he was too negative. Maybe he should have opened up and gone down the Huddersfield and Cardiff route.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? That's true, actually. You know, took Newcastle up and he's kept Brighton in there.
Yeah, should have gone down.
He's a bit unlucky, isn't he, Chris Hughton? Don't look out for a drink with him.
How unlucky can you get?
We're joined now by Reece Tyrrell of the Daily Star Sport. Reece, any idea on why Chris Hughton's been sacked?
Yeah, afternoon, guys.
Afternoon.
Yeah, Chris has done a great job at Brighton. You know, 4.5 years of success, taking the club from the bottom of the Championship all the way up to Premier League. But about the turn of the year, the fans turned on him. The defensive football stopped working. They shipped 5 goals at home to Bournemouth. Anyone who ships 5 at home to Bournemouth has got to be in big trouble. And then he survived by the skin of their teeth, really, in the end. 2 points above Cardiff. And I think it's a bit of a preemptive move, getting out before before it all gets unravelled a little bit more in November, December next year, perhaps.
So you do think it's the style? I mean, we spoke about it against Tottenham. They literally parked the bus. And it, normally, if you park the bus, you will have an outlet. You know, once the ball comes out, there would be somebody.
Well, our outlet was Ericsson.
Spurs outlet. was your inlet.
It was our inlet, yeah.
But it was so defensive. It was so one-sided. It was ridiculous. Yeah. And all that the commentators went on about how great defensively Brighton were, but that's not a football team. Do you think this is the reason why it was so painful to watch, because it was so defensive?
Yeah, I think it's probably less the games against Spurs. It was the problem. I was in the away end that night. I felt the fans got behind the team, sort of enjoyed reveling in winding up Tottenham.
Yeah,
the goalkeeper wasting half a minute every time the ball went out. You know, yeah. I think the fans got behind that.
Right.
It was the home form has been the problem.
So the sacking really wasn't a surprise to the fans then.
I think it's taken the Brighton fan base less by surprise than everybody else.
Really?
Oh, right. Okay.
If I would say, I think Brighton fans split around 50-50 on it.
Wow. Really?
And when the news came out, I think a lot of fans sort of thought a little bit surprised, but actually on reflection, maybe it's the right time to change it up.
Is that what you think? Do you think it's the right time, or you don't think it was harsh?
I think it was brutal. I think it was a tough call, but only time will tell whether it's the right decision.
Absolutely.
But if the form of the second half of the season carries into the first half of next, then Brighton will be bottom of the league at Christmas. Mm. And they'll be looking for a new manager then. They don't want to get stuck in a cycle like Swansea or Swansea
Fulham.
Did, where they on Fulham constantly sacking managers,
right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Was there a completely different style of football when he got you up from the Championship? Was it so much more attacking? However, once you get into the Prem, is that you can't keep the ball because it's such a different style?
I mean, Chris has always set up the team defensively strong. They were always so well organised, and they get more of the ball in the Championship. But they were always a counter-attack inside.
Right.
I'd just say that the lack of pace in the Premier League has killed them. There's, as you said, against Tottenham, there's just no outlet.
Yeah.
You know, when someone like Crystal Palace do it, they've got Zaha and Townsend hammering you down the flanks. You've got an option. You've got an out ball.
Mm.
Brighton just haven't got that. And Chris, probably not really responsible for the signings there. They would have come from someone else within the club.
I did say this, actually. After watching Brighton against Tottenham, and I said that you didn't have an outlet, and then West Ham played Tottenham on the Saturday, and of course West Ham beat Tottenham, but they had three outlets in Arnautovic, Anderson and Antonio. And I was looking, and we were sort of saying, well, why couldn't Brighton done that? But it purely was that. It's everyone parked behind the ball, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Glenn Murray's the top goal scorer, but he's probably the slowest player in the Prem.
It's so slow, yeah. He's got,
He doesn't need it, though. He's
a bully. He is quite a bully player, but to play breakaway football, he's not quick enough for that.
No,
quite. And that's not, you know, I don't think Chris can be held responsible for that level of recruitment. They've wasted a lot of money on players who haven't improved the side.
Who do you see replacing him? I mean, who's gonna get the job, do you think?
Well, it all sounds like it's going to be Graham Potter. From Swansea. And obviously did well in Sweden, beat the Arsenal last season, didn't they, in the Europa League.
Nobody else in the running race?
No.
I think he's their first choice.
Okay.
And then they'll reassess. But we're likely to look at a young, and it's going to be a head coach rather than a manager.
Would that be your choice?
I think Potter's as good as anyone. He's a fresh face to bring in with new ideas. I think he's got to be better than going on the cycle of getting the Pardews and Allardyce.
Hughes,
which you know doesn't work.
Yeah. But if he was Chris Hughton, you'd have the right hump, though, wouldn't you? You'd done
take
all that.
Take a Newcastle up.
Kept
Brighton in the
We took Brighton from the bottom of the Championship right up into the Premiership. Ta-da!
See you, mate.
See you, mate. Yeah. Thanks a lot, but ta-da.
Yeah.
It's harsh, isn't it?
Well,
brutal.
Reece, let's hope he's not on Jeremy Kyle next week.
Well, he won't be. Jeremy Kyle's not on.
In fact, Jeremy Kyle might end up as manager of Brighton. how things could turn around.
Anyone who wants to get out of the Championship this season, give Chris Hughton a call and he'll get them up.
I think you're probably right, yeah.
Do you know what? I think you're absolutely Fulham, right. Good luck to him as well.
Well, there you go. We spoke about that yesterday, but it said Fulham maybe have made a quick decision on Scott Parker.
Should have had Chris Hughton, shouldn't
they? Chris Hughton
absolutely.
Might have been the man for the job.
There we are.
Reece Terrell, thank you ever so much. Daily Star Sport reporter there. It's we said about, you know, Claudio Ranieri.
Yes.
You know, wins the Premiership the following year. Boom. Ta-da. Yeah. It's a fickle world we're in, John.
So, there we are. So let's reflect on what we've said today. We've had the oldest man dies 123.
Yep.
Jeremy Kyle's been taken off the air. Agnew. Jonathan Agnew.
Just go on the Agnew thing.
Yeah.
I think we reported earlier that Agnew had obviously this expletive that begins with C. It plastered in capital letters on Twitter.
But it was a private message.
And then we found out it was a direct message.
Yes.
Okay, so is that okay? Is it still okay? And is it okay for somebody else to screenshot it and show everybody else as to what he said?
We got a few tweets about Mike Dean.
Okay. Mike Dean, the referee, who was jumping up and down at the training game.
Keithy says, seeing Mike Dean game in the football equivalent of seeing a teacher on a night out. He's right, actually.
You're right.
He's got a point.
Yeah.
It's like...
I was away. I was away on a skiing holiday, and we spotted. Was it Mike Dean? And it's almost like that. It's almost like a school teacher. You go, oh, I'm not sure whether I'm allowed to go over and talk to him. Do I call him sir? It's very odd.
Yeah, it is.
I've got one more. Paul Berry. I have just seen Mike Dean singing in the away end at Forest Green, and don't think I will ever need to watch any football again. Disturbing. There you go.
Says Frank Noble.
Yep.
Hang on, Mike Dean's in the Tremier stands. He loves it.
There are various, we've referenced people today.
It's very positive for him.
That are the famous fans, if you like. Okay, and it's there's always one at a ground. Listen, we're going to be talking the next couple of days about the FA Cup final coming up this weekend. We're going to be talking about Elton John because Elton John will not be going to the FA Cup final.
No, he won't.
So we're going to be having a little bit of a banter about Elton John in the next few days.
And there you go. That's been a great show today.
Bell and Sterling on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.